I'm Jim.
Rabbi Simon.
Okay, 1 o'clock?
Probably.
Okay.
Okay,
so let's get started. A lot of Chazara to cover. So we're going to try to cover as much as we can today, probably go a little bit into tomorrow, but again, our goal was not to take too many more days. So hopefully not even all of tomorrow, and we'll get back into Kotzer. So essentially, we need to talk about still Melach Shem Tzrich L'Gufa and Sik Reisha. So we're going to talk very briefly. We spent a long time on Melach Shem Tzrich L'Gufa. We're going to try to cover as much as possible of it today. So we're clearly going to speak in a more direct fashion, but essentially, we tried to figure out what exactly was going on, recognizing that Melach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa is a very confusing sugya. It's a sugya where you have to try to make a lot of gemaras and a lot of rishonim work in harmony, and as much as you are committed to peace, you can find it to be a challenging endeavor. So we do the best we can, and we'll try to paint somewhat of a broad picture, that essentially we know that the question of Melach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa itself is a machlokas in the Gemara, that the view of Rabbi Yochanan is that one is chayiv even if the malacha that one is doing is Eina Tzrich L'Gufa. But the view of Rabbi Huda is that one is chayiv for Melach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa, which is a chatzishir overlap. Rabbi Huda is machayiv, and the view of Rabbi Shimon, not to be confused with Rish Lakish, the view of Rav Shimon is that one is putter. And that seems to be a prevalent view, but we'll come back to that point. So certainly if that is a prevalent view, we need to define what does it mean? What is the Melach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa? So here's where we find a Machlokas Rishonim, with the majority of Rishonim probably siding with the less well-known view. And a number of Rishonim, there are different permutations, and we spent some time talking about some of the possible differences between them. But broadly speaking, there are, let's say, two views, with one view seeing that Melach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa essentially means that you are getting rid of a problem, a situation that you didn't want, that now you're stuck with, so to get rid of that, that's a negative action, so to speak, and that's considered to be a Melach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa. That seems to be the view of Rashi in a number of places, that anytime you're trying to get rid of a problem, it's called Melach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa. And it seems to be the view of a number of other Rishonim, such as the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, who talk about Hana, that you're not really getting Hana for this action, is basically because you have a problem that you have to undo, so that's again called Ein Tzrich L'Gufa. And a lot of them quote the Balamor, who writes more at length about this, and he focuses on the fact that in the Mishkan, all the malachas that were done for the purposes of something positive, and therefore, if you're doing something negative, then that's already not comparable to the Mishkan. And that statement already kind of blurring a little bit where this is coming from, possibly creating a bridge between different views in terms of what our definition is. The Rambam's view seems to be consistent with this, the way the Rambam talks about what a Melach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa is. He says it in the context of saying that whatever it is, you're chayiv for it. That essentially he follows the view of Rabbi Yehuda, that he's mechayiv for Melach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa. And the Raiva there expresses disagreement, quoting Rabbeinu Hananel, that we assume that Rabbi Shimon is correct and that one is pater. So here the Rambam, essentially a loner, not necessarily completely, but standing up on his own and saying one is chayiv for this, and in the context of saying that, probably giving a definition consistent with these Rishonim. And on the other side, we talked a little bit about it's possible to harmonize, but definitely they feel they're on the other side, is the Balei HaTosfos. The Balei HaTosfos basically assert that the definition that is used is what we've called a Mishkanian definition. That essentially every malacha becomes defined by what was done in the Mishkan. And if you're doing a malacha for a purpose other than what was done in the Mishkan, so then that's already not called Tzrich L'Gufa. And Tosfos has a bunch of questions on Rashi. So again, Tosfos definitely feels that they are in a big fight with Rashi, even if you feel it's possible to harmonize them. Tosfos definitely doesn't feel harmonious. Tosfos definitely has a lot of objections to Rashi's view. And among the objections, so first of all, what about the malacha such as Soser? So if you have to knock down a building so that you can build a new building, so wouldn't you say that that's something that you're doing because you have a problem? You have a building standing in the middle of a plot that you'd like to use. So shouldn't that be classified as a malacha shein tzrich l'gufa? So the Kapos Tamarim says, no, that's a hachana for another malacha. So if you have an action that's considered to be a hachana for another malacha, so then that's already got a definition, that's not going to be considered emes richa legufa. There are others for him that try to sharpen the definition a little bit according to these Rishonim. So for example, the Megine Shlomo, which is a sefer that was written to defend the position of Rashi against Tosas. So the Megine Shlomo uses the yesod that any time that once you've gotten rid of your problem, so now you wouldn't care if the tikkun that you did was undone. It was only necessary because you had to get rid of some problem. So now that you got rid of it, you could lose your malacha and you'd be just as happy. So then that's considered to be a definition, according to him, of a malacha shein tzricha legufa. So just to give you an example, so that might help, for example, using to contrast it between that and bishul. And so you might say, well, bishul is malacha shein tzricha legufa because I wish my food was already cooked. So he'll say, no, that if your food became uncooked, you'd be unhappy. You don't want your food to become uncooked. Malacha shein tzricha legufa would be purely something that is only there to chase away a problem, and once it chases away a problem, it can also disappear, and that's how he understands the view of Rashi and those Rishonim who would be with him. The Kaplis Tamarim, we've mentioned already, Kaplis Tamarim, the Chashav HaSefer on Sukkah by Moshe Ibn Chabib, and he has a lengthy discussion of Malacha shein tzricha legufa issues. So he basically asserts that the principle is that if you have a problem which you could solve many different ways, like, so for example, you want to say, well, I'm only cooking because I'm hungry, I wish I wasn't hungry, but you could solve your hunger in many different ways. So your cooking is not called the malach shein tzricha legufa. But if you are forced to address a situation because that's your problem, this is in your face, and you have to get rid of it, so then that becomes a malach shein tzricha legufa, which we compared to the difference between a legitimate security service and a protection racket. So if you're paying for a security service to solve your problems, you could hire any security service. You could do whatever you thought of to protect yourself. But the idea of a protection racket is they're the one who caused your problems and then say, okay, pay us to get rid of them. So that's clearly illegitimate. That's clearly not a valid service. So to hear anything like that, where they're the problem, so you have to get rid of it, so that's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. But if you're just taking one method among many to address your situation, that's not a malacha shein tzricha legufa. And the Dvar Yehoshua, in one of his tshuvas, compared this to a shach, that the shach talked about the situation where somebody has to save his life using somebody else's property. And we discussed the question of whether he has to pay back or not, what are the different circumstances. So there he was machalik between two different cases. That if somebody says to you, I'll shoot you if you don't give me Reuven's money, if you don't steal Reuven's money, so then you're considered to be completely honest. Then he put a gun to your head and told you to steal Reuven's money, that's completely his fault. But if he says, I'll shoot you if you give me $1,000, and you don't have $1,000, so the only way you can get it is to steal money from someone, and you choose to steal from Reuven, so then that's considered to be a decision that you made, even though you made it under honor, so you would have to pay back. That's considered to be matzil atzmo b'mamon chaveiro. So basically the distinction between those two cases, in one case where you're forced into one specific route, and another case where theoretically, at least, not necessarily actually, but theoretically, there could be a number of ways to deal with your problem. So that seems to be the same structure here, that this is how the Kaplis Tamarim is understanding what those Rishonim say. This is in your face and you got to get rid of it. That's called Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa as opposed to otherwise. I mentioned also that in the Sefer Nesiva Shalom, so he discusses that if you wanted to take this to its farthest extent, basically a reductio ad absurdum, the ad bad bechlal, you can basically nullify any malacha. Every malacha, by definition, is about perfecting the world, and you wish the world was already perfect, so halavai, you didn't have to do anything, and you could just lie back in Gan Eden and enjoy. So the idea that you have to do any work is not desirable. So wouldn't you prefer that all malachas weren't there? Because you can't take it that far. I mean, anything that's part of the normal seder of the world, you have to take the fruit off the tree. Anything that's a normal way of life, that's automatically going to be considered a normal malacha. You're not going to call that a malacha shein tzricha legufa, the fact that you have to separate the fruit from the tree and cook your food, etc., etc. So there's some nafkaminas between the definitions. So for example, one that the Laharus Nassan mentioned. So let's say you take a child out of a burning house to save him from the fire. So that would be, on the one hand, it's comparable to It's comparable to a malacha shein tzricha legufa in one sense, but not in the other, because you're doing it for a negative reason. You're doing it to save him from the fire, but on the other hand, you're also different than the malacha shein tzricha legufa mishkan issue, because it's not that you're taking it to be away from somewhere, you're taking him to be outside. So you could see that as possibly reflecting these differences. Hi.
How is it really different than taking a dead body out of the...
The dead body, you don't want the body at all, essentially. You want it to be away from you. Here, you want the child, you just want him to be somewhere else. But the reason you want it to be somewhere else is because the fire is in the house. The Kapos Tamarim has an example which is controversial. You could argue how finely you define things. He suggests that if you are, let's say you trap an animal, but you trap the animal not to use its skin like they did in the Mishkan, but to use it for refuah. So he suggests that's a difference from the Mishkan. It's a positive use, so those who show him would say a positive use would consider it to be tzricha legufa, but he thinks it's different enough from the Mishkan. One could quibble with that. One could argue that how specific do we have to get in terms of the Mishkan? They took it to use it, so you're also taking it to use it. That's not necessarily fundamentally different. Hi.
What are we bringing the horse lesson for?
So like how you could have horses? Yeah, how you could have cases where according to some definitions would be Malachishin Tzrich Lagufa, and according to others they wouldn't be. Rav Asher Weiss has a comment where he questions Tosfos, all of Tosfos' questions where he tries to make different Gemaras harmonize according to Rashi's view. He's assuming that all of the definitions have to be the same, that there's only one definition of Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa. It could be that there's more than one definition. It could be that a Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa might be any time when the benefit is negative, you're trying to solve a problem, or it could be when the benefit is secondary, like for example, you're digging a hole to get the dirt. So maybe that's a positive benefit, but it's not the normal benefit that comes straight out of digging a hole. Maybe there's more than one definition. So the truth is, one could say, based on his point, that really you could ask a different question about Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa. Is it a positive factor or a negative factor, basically? Do we say that a malacha has to be Tzricha Legufa in order for it to be chayiv? Or do we say that a malacha that's ain't a Tzricha Legufa is pater? Because if it has to be Tzricha Legufa, so then we might have one specific definition of what Tzricha Legufa means. While if it's considered to be pater because it's not Tzricha Legufa, so then perhaps you could say that a number of things could fall under that ptur. Could perhaps be considered included within that. A possible way of looking at it. The Rishonim also seem to disagree along their lines as to what is the cause for the Tor or Chiyuv of Malach Shein Tzricha Legufa, that Rashi explicitly says it's an issue of Malachas Machshaves, and if you don't have Tzricha Legufa, you're lacking in that. And Tosfos in Yuma specifically says that it's more an issue of the derived from the Mishkan, which is consistent with their view that the Malachas have to match the Mishkan, so therefore that's also the source of the Tor of Malach Shein Tzricha Legufa. Of course, Malachas Machshavas itself derives from the Mishkan, but that's a more indirect limud. Then we discussed the question a little bit also, that what's the nature of the machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon? What's the nature of their chiyuv? That if Rabbi Yehuda holds one is chayiv, so why does he hold one is chayiv, and why does Rabbi Shimon disagree? So Rashi in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph, Rashi says that just the Rabbi Yehuda's definition is that since it's needed for something, whether it's the Tzricha Legufa or not, but since it's needed for something, what you're doing, that's called Malachas Machshavas, which is also consistent with the idea that Rabbi Yehuda would, in some cases, still pater, that if something is completely kilkul, something is completely unnecessary, then even Rabbi Yehuda would pater. So basically, he would agree, according to this, with the basic Malachas Machshavas issue. He just has a broader definition, that if you need it for something, that's called Malachas Machshavas, which is similar to a comment the Rashba has. Rashba in Bava Kama and Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, he basically says it's machlokus between them as to what Malachas Machshavas tells us. That according to Reb Shimon, it means that any kilkul is pater, so if your action is, or anything less than directly positive, so if your action is beneficial, but it's beneficial in a negative way, then Malachas Machshavas paters that. And Rabbi Yehuda comes from the opposite direction. He says, Malachas Machshavas basically tells us that anything productive counts. So even if it's not necessarily productive in the same way as the Mishkan was, or it's not productive necessarily in a directly positive sense, but in a anti-negative sense, that all qualifies as Malachas Machshavas. So that according to him, they basically are both deriving their principles from Malachas Machshavas, just coming from different directions. Rav Shimon saying it tells us that the benefit has to be one that is assertive and positive, and Rabbi Huda saying that as long as there is a benefit, that's going to be enough regardless of what it is. And so, hi.
What she does it?
Who said that? The Rashba. And then we mentioned also that the Klausenberger Rebbe had a truth in the Divrei Yatziv, where he suggests it's a technical issue. That Rabbi Huda says if you're chayiv misa for Chilul Shabbos, so then we can't pater Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa, because how are the Eidim going to know that? How are they going to know what your intent is? So therefore, the fact that it's a possibility of Chiyuv Misa, that seems to tell us that it is applicable even with a Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa. And maybe Rav Shimon disagrees, because he says there's a requirement of Kabbalah Hasra. The person's going to have to tell you that he's Kabbalah Hasra, so therefore as part of that process, it'll be clear that he's doing it for the purpose that's normally there, assuming that he understands that. We mentioned also that the Meiser Rokeach is an 18th century sefer, where Pritan Chumash, in his commentary to Vayakel, where he suggests, this is a Yevamis unity point, that the Gemara in the first parak of Yevamis has a machlokus whether or not smuchin are drushim, whether or not we interpret smuchin, psukim that are next to each other, anywhere outside of Dvarim. Is it only done in Mishnah Torah, or is it done in B'chol Torah Kula? So maybe that's the machlokus, that Malachas Machshavas is really from the Mishkan, so it's a smuchin limud to Shabbos. So maybe Reb Shimon says we derive it, and Reb Yehuda disagrees and says you don't derive it, which is a very sweeping idea. That would mean that Reb Yehuda essentially denies Malachas Machshavas, which would have tremendous implications. So that's
makes sense though.
Could be, but that would be quite a big deal. So that gives us basically, let's say, three different perspectives, three different ways of looking at their machlokas. Is their machlokas about different interpretations of Malachas Machshavas? That was the first approach. Is it about a technical issue, just in applying the rules of Shabbos? Or is it about the existence of Malachas Machshavas at all, a pretty fundamental issue? Different ways of looking at why Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon argue in the first place. Chassam Sofer, in his commentary to Shabbos and Daf Ayin Hey, suggests there are different types of Malachas Machshavas. That when you have a Malachas Machshavas that's low ichbis lay, to use the terminology from Segresha, that you just don't care about the function that is Tzrich L'Gufa, so then that's a Chisar and a Malachas Machshavas. If you mamish don't want it, if it's lo nichalei, so then that's a lack of comparison to the Mishkan. At the Mishkan, everything was done for positive purpose, for intentional purpose, so then that's going to take things even further out of the equation. So how do we paskin on this question? So that's not clear as well. The Magen Avraham seems to always follow the view like Tosfos. I mentioned that Tosfos, even though it's the majority view, it's the minority view, most of the Rishonim say differently than Tosfos, but Tosfos' view seems to be the more famous one. If you ask the average person who's somewhat fluent, he'll probably tell you Tosfos' view. And the Magen Avraham seems to follow it. And not only the Magen Avraham, but a very important contemporary posek, the 39 Malachas book, the picture book, also takes this opinion. So the next door is all being educated, that's what it means. So that's a tremendous influence for Tosfos' view. The Taz, however, if you read him carefully, seems to be following the view of the other Rishonim. So the Nesiva Shalom, we mentioned that Sefer and Malachas Machshavas, so he argues that one would probably have to be machmir for both, meaning that in order for something to be pater, it would have to be neither definition of Malach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, which may also correlate to what we brought up before about whether Malach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa is a positive definition or a negative definition. Then we talked a little bit, without getting all the way into our segregation discussion, but we talked a little bit about the question of what is the definition and what's the difference in definitions between Psik Resha and Malach Hashem Yitzricha L'Gufa, that the Kesef Mishnah asserts that the difference is that Psik Resha you have no intent, while the Malach Hashem Yitzricha L'Gufa you have intent to do a different Malach. So some of the Svarim, such as the Merkabas HaMishkan and the Kaplis Tamarim, ask that that seems to make Moach HaShem Yitzrich LeGufa more Chomer, and really it should be more Mekel. So the truth is, maybe he means it is more Chomer, because he's commenting on the Rambam, who paskins that it's Chayit. So within the Rambam it makes sense for Moach HaShem Yitzrich LeGufa to be more Chomer. Also, not only is he paskining on the is he writing on the Rambam, but he's also quoting Ravam ben Rambam. So maybe it makes sense that this explanation would treat Malach HaShem Tzrich L'Gufa as more Chomer. But if we assume that Malach HaShem Tzrich L'Gufa is less Chomer than Psik Reisha, because Rav Shimon is Moda in Psik Reisha the Nichale that you are Chayiv, and in Malach HaShem Tzrich L'Gufa he's pattering, so then we have to explain what he's talking about. So in order to try to understand the Kesef Mishnah, we have to even know what direction we're coming from. What's the premise? Is his premise that Malach HaShem Tzrich L'Gufa is more Chomer, or is it that Psik Reisha is more Chomer? So a lot of those who asked questions on him assumed that Psik Reisha is more Chomer, even though there's grounds to take it the opposite way, that he's assuming Malach HaShem Tzrich L'Gufa is more Chomer, because he's working off the Rambam. Yeah.
Could you just say that again? Sorry.
Yeah, that's a little confusing. That he tries to, the Kesef Mishnah explains the difference between the two. Right. So before we understand his difference, so we need to know what's more Chomer. So the Svar to say either way. You could say that Malach HaShem Yitzrich L'Gufa is more Chomer, because Rav Yehuda is Mechayev for Malach HaShem Yitzrich L'Gufa, and for Psik Reisha, Talo Nichale, he paters. So therefore, maybe Malach HaShem Yitzrich L'Gufa is more Chomer than Psik Reisha, depending on what you want to use as the control in Psik Reisha. But if you follow Rav Shimon's view, that Malach HaShem Yitzrich L'Gufa is Pater, so then it comes out that Psik Reisha is more Chomer because it's Chayev with Nichale. So Psik Reisha is the variable one because it can accommodate either view. So your basic question is Malach HaShem Yitzrich L'Gufa Chomer or Kal? So if you hold that it's Chayev, it's Chomer. If you hold that it's Pater, it's Kal. So since the Rambam holds it's Chayev, so he probably holds it's Chomer. So the Kesef Mishnah could just be working off of his position. But according, we come from the perspective that one's Pater, so we forget the Kesef Mishnah is on the side of the Rambam. And we wonder, how could his explanation work if you say that Malach HaShem Yitzrich L'Gufa is more Mekel, is more Pater? So there are, let's say, two basic approaches. One approach, like the Kachav Avarav expresses, is to say that Psik Reisha basically means that the two actions become completely connected. So therefore, once action A and action B become linked, so now what do you have? So you have a Malacha and you have full intent. While a Malacha Shein Yitzrich L'Gufa is less than that because it's a Malacha with different intent. That's one way to look at it. Alternatively,
what's the quote that you're going to say?
You have to practice saying his name. He said that.
What's the name of the Sefer again? The Riyatzin?
That's a Klausenberger. How could you possibly confuse the Klausenberger and the Kajib Lover? So his name is called, his Shuvas is called the Shuvas Eretzvi. You have to be confused with the Eretz Hatzvi. So the Eretzvi, the Kajib Lover says that, and this idea is not so uncommon. In Psik Reisha, this is a very common approach, that if you assume that it's all one action, that the Psik Reisha reality makes it all A and B into one thing, so then maybe you have all the parts there. So you have intent to do action A, B, and action A, B is a malacha, so you're fully chayav for it. While Malach HaShem Yitzrich L'Gufa, you don't have the right intention, you have the wrong intention. So that's what the Kesef Mishnah means, that Malach HaShem Yitzrich L'Gufa is more mekel, because it's lacking the right intention. While Psik Reisha's got the right intention because it's all one big thing. Alternatively, others suggest that Malach HaShem Yitzrich L'Gufa is better because wrong kavana is less chayiv than no kavana. No kavana is a blank slate which can come in and be filled by something. Alternative kavana occupies all the oxygen, takes up all the space, so therefore that diverts it into something else. So yes, it's worse to have worse in the sense of being less chayiv. You're less chayiv if you have kavana for something else rather than having no kavana at all. Does that make sense? More or less? Okay, so then we talked a little bit about the Merkabas HaMishnah, his phenomenally long, one paragraph, 20 page essay about this, where he doesn't really come up for air and talks about his definitions. And he says that essentially, and he has some really great phrases for those who appreciate puns and the like, but he basically suggests that, just to really not do it justice, but just to really boil it down to one or two lines, that first of all, he thinks all the Rishonim are saying the same thing in terms of Malach Hashem Yitzricha L'Gufa. But it all comes down to the fact that a Malach Hashem Yitzricha L'Gufa, to use the philosopher's terms, is essentially a question of primary intent versus secondary intent. If you want to do that thing, if you ask somebody, why is he doing something? He's saying he's doing it because he wants to do it. So that's called Yitzricha L'Gufa. And if he's doing it because he wants something else, that's called Ein Yitzricha L'Gufa. So he gives the example, if you're painting your shirt red because you want it to be red, that's called Tzricha L'Gufa. If you're painting it red because you don't want it to be green, that's called Ein Tzricha L'Gufa. And he thinks that all the Rishonim fit into that structure, which is not necessarily such an unusual thing to say. He presents it as a very big deal. And then he says, in terms of Pesach Reisha and Malach Hashem Tzricha L'Gufa, that they're basically different points on a spectrum. That if you have something that is an absolute tikkun, so then it has the potential of being a psik resha. And if it's not, then if it's a questionable tikkun, then it potentially could be a malach hashem yitzricha l'gufa. But it can't; they can't really occupy the same space. That's either potentially a psik resha or not. And it's those situations are by definition not going to be malach hashem yitzricha l'gufa, which is possible.
So, Malach Hashem Yitzricha L'Gufa is...
It's never going to be a situation where it's an objective tikkun, because then if that were the case, it would be definitely chayav. So, Malach Hashem Yitzricha L'Gufa needs a more ambiguous tikkun for it to require your kavana, and therefore to have the potential exclusion of not having the right kavana.
But, like, if you're killing a snake, that's not an objective
tikkun? Not necessarily. Not necessarily at all. Destructive act.
That was also Mekev's Mishnah.
Sorry?
That last part was also
That's also Mekev's Mishnah. Again, the Mekev's Mishnah in his full glory is about at least 10 pages long in all one paragraph, but that's the way he sums it up at the end. So the Kapos Tamarim mentions also that these chilukim, let's say the Kesef Mishnah's chiluk, so that works better if you follow the view of the other Rishonim, that you say that something is negative. So if something is negative that makes it Ein Tzricha L'Gufa, so then a Psik Reisha is different because you have the intent for the first action, so then it all combines into one. But if Tosfos requires Mishkanian intent, so how does Psik Reisha work? It's not necessarily Mishkanian intent, just because you did action A on purpose doesn't make it any more Mishkanian. May make it more constructive, but doesn't necessarily make it more Mishkanian. You understand this point? It's basically saying like this, says, according to the Kesef Mishnah, what's the difference between a Malach Hashem Yitzricha L'Gufa and a Psik Reisha? The difference is that the Malach Hashem Yitzricha L'Gufa, you don't have intent to be Mechayev. And the Psik Reisha you do, because your intent for action A grafts onto action B. And you wanted to do action A positively. So that works okay if you believe that the whole issue is negative intent makes it Ein Tzricha L'Gufa. So here you have positive intent with action A. It's something you want to do positively. So then, boom, it all becomes one thing, which is a positive action. So you're chayav. But if the definition of Malach HaTzricha L'Gufa is Mishkanian, so then what makes this situation necessarily Mishkanian? Just because you wanted to do action A doesn't necessarily mean that it's Mishkan-based. Maybe action A is a different positive goal. There's nothing in Psik Reisha that necessarily assumes that it's a Mishkanian goal. So he says you have to say then, according to Tosfos, that it is, that that's what it means, that according to Tosfos, Psik Reisha Denichale means it's Nichale that the Mishkanian goal is accomplished. So let's say for whatever example you give, but that the what you're happy about is that you accomplished a goal that is consistent with the Mishkan purpose of this malach. Because otherwise this distinction doesn't really make sense. Okay, so far so good?
I don't understand the connection. Why do you have to have a Mishkan by Psik Reisha?
Because his point is that
it's going to be a malach shein tzricha
l'gufa. It'll still be a malach shein tzricha l'gufa, right? Even though the fact that you positively want to do action A, great that you positively want to do it. Positive is only an issue according to the other Rishon. according to Tosfos, is not the goal, unless you have to redefine it and say, yes, Tosfos would say that it means that you want a Mishkan-type Nichole. We also mentioned that it's important to be aware of a nuance that exists within these Rishonim, the negative Rishonim. So there's a nuance which is relevant to what we're up to now in terms of Kotzer and Gozes. So let's say, for example, somebody clips his nails or shaves his beard. So is that considered to be a Melacha HaTzricha L'Gufa or Ein HaTzricha L'Gufa? So it's Machlokas in the Mishnah about somebody who is doing this. And the view that one is chayiv for clipping his nails, cutting his hair, Tosfos says that would have to be only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to Rabbi Shimon, somebody would be potter for this. And because according to Rabbi Shimon, this would be a malacha shenitzricha legufa, because in the Mishkan, when they did gozes in the Mishkan, when they cut the wool off the sheep, so they did it because they need the wool. So a person who shaves his beard doesn't need the hair. A person who cuts his fingernails doesn't need the nails. So memela, it shouldn't fit the Mishkan definition. So according to Tosfos, it's considered to be a malacha shenitzricha legufa. So the truth is, you could even say, according to the other Rishonim, also it's a malacha shenitzricha legufa. Right? You could say, what do you want? You want to get rid of the hair. You want to get rid of the long fingernails. According to the other Rishonim also, they might agree with this. So that might be the case. But the Ramban feels differently. The Ramban feels that he has a little bit of a vague phrase, but he says that this is all one thing. That this is all one netila. And the way he's explained by the Achronim, like the Stipler, is as follows. That essentially, a malacha shenitzricha legufa would mean that you have action A, you have item A, you're working on item A, and your benefit is somewhere else. So if you define the nails as what you're working on, you're working on the nails, you're working on the hair. So you're benefiting your fingers, you're benefiting your face. So you might say that that's a malacha shein esricha legufa. But the Ramban says, no, they are all our arena of activity. The face and the hair is all one unit. So I am working on the face with the beard, and I'm enhancing the face with the beard. So that's called esricha legufa. The fingers and the nails are all considered to be one unit. So I'm working on my fingers slash nails, and I'm enhancing my fingers slash nails. That's all one thing. Hi.
But according to the stipulation that you're working on something and benefiting from somewhere, isn't that very much or too similar to segregation then? How would you define segregation different?
No, because segregation means you're two different actions. Here we're saying that there's just different arenas, that I'm doing one action here, but the benefit from my action is somewhere else. I'm digging a hole, but the hole is productive because my dirt is going to come with me. I'm not interested in the hole. So here he's saying, don't view this as nails versus fingers. I'm cutting nails to help my fingers. I'm cutting hair to help my face. No, I'm shaving my face. As we'd say in English, right? We don't necessarily say you're shaving your beard. You might say that, but you could equally say you're shaving your face, because you're essentially enhancing your face by taking away the hair. So you're operating on the face. That's essentially what the Ramban says, basically. Hi.
So, I think I heard a share from Russell Lawson who was talking about women cutting their nails for the mikvah on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that enhancing? That's enhancing the fingers, but for the purpose of the mitzvah. It's not like,
right. So that's where it gets into a combination of factors. Because there, and he probably also distinguished between, let's say, Yetuv Sheni and the Mir Lakum.
He was talking about Mir Lakum.
Right, so that you have a couple of factors that are coming into play. So if you assume that it's a malach shen tzricha legufa, which is a machlokas Rishonim, but you could have a number of Rishonim who say that it is, but you have Tosfos for sure that says that it is, and even the other Rishonim, some of them will say yes, and the Ramban will say that it's not. So you already have a number of possibilities as a malach shen tzricha legufa. But then also in general, when it comes to nails, you might say, okay, I want my fingers to look nice, that's one thing. But for the mikvah, I'm trying to avoid a chatzitza, so I just have this in my way, I just want to get rid of it. I'm not trying to enhance my fingers. That's even less of a tzricha legufa than normal nail cutting. And then put it together with maybe if it's Yantav Sheni, if he was talking about, and the tzarech mitzvah, and malacha, and mir la'akum, put all that together, there could be a different cheshbon to look at it.
So is it that different to say, like, you just don't want the nails there, you don't care what it does? Like, would that be, if you're cutting your nails to make your hands look nice, but if you in general, even not for the makeup, for whatever reason, you just don't want the nails there?
That's why, in that situation, stam normal nail cutting, that's why they were still Rishonim who called that Melach Hashem Tzvich HaLigufa. Right, it's a tostus because it doesn't follow the Mishkan model, but maybe even other Rishonim because it's about getting rid of these long nails. But that's where the Ramban says, no, but you're enhancing your fingers, that's what you're trying to do, you're working on your fingers to enhance them. That's called a positive Melach HaTzricha LeGufa. But you could throw in here that in this case, for the mikvah, it's not all about enhancing your fingers, it's only about getting this chatzitza out of the way, so then maybe you have more of a consensus that that's considered to be Enes Tzricha LeGufa.
The Ramban be mechalik between, could the Ramban say that in Gozer Shiva and Shabbos would be Tzricha?
Why would that become that? That's more Tzricha LeGufa. That's what you saying it all of a sudden becomes the normal Gozer that everyone else says Tzricha LeGufa, he's saying Tzricha LeGufa?
I think he's building the hair down.
Because he has both of them as a territory. He has the hair and the body as a territory. So whatever you want, if you want the nails or if you want the fingers, it's all included.
He'll say it's the brother.
Yeah, so since you want the wool, so that's for sure. It's very hard to say shearing the wool for the sake of the wool. Right, no, so he would say that it's all part of, he's expanding our territory. This is the way the Acharonim understand it. He's very brief in the way he says it, but the way the Acharonim explained it is he's expanding our territory. So don't think you're just interested in your nails. You're interested in the nails and the fingers. So, and you're working on the nails and the fingers. So any part of it that you're benefiting from, this direct action, that makes it count. And so too with the wall. Okay, so far so good? More or less? Okay, so then we talked about some other questions. Now the question of whether something with Sarach Mitzvah, is that considered tangential or is that considered to be a tikkun? We mentioned that it sounds like from Tosfos that if you're doing something for a mitzvah purpose, such as Kriya, let's say, for a mitzvah, or possibly Kvura, so then that would be considered Lagufa, even if otherwise it would be considered to be non-positive. It's a hard thing how that makes it Mishkanian, by the way. That Tosfos, we weren't able to fully understand that, how it's Tzarech Mitzvah, that seems to work more for the other Rishonim, that we're looking for some positive purpose. So then you could argue that the Tzarech Mitzvah is a positive purpose. Tosfos' view that it's got to fit the Mishkan, I don't know if we had a satisfactory answer as to how Tzarech Mitzvah helps. But other Rishonim disagreed anyway, and other Rishonim said that Tzarech Mitzvah is not necessarily considered to be Tzricha LeGufa, that's considered to be external, and that doesn't necessarily fall into the same category. Some of the Rishonim distinguished that if something is a mitzvah, by doing the mitzvah, it creates a real-world benefit. So then that might be Tzricha LeGufa. So for example, Kriya. So somebody who's an Avo and needs to wear torn clothes, so the tearing of the clothes is a Kiyum Mitzvah, but it also makes the clothes wearable. So it could be considered a Tikkun, not because he's fulfilling a mitzvah by doing it, but because he's making the clothes wearable, so therefore it has this real-world benefit, despite in addition to the fact that it's also a Kiyum Mitzvah, which wouldn't be the focus. Okay, then we got into the big debate. This is a little bit of one of the halacha l'maisa components. The question of what happens if somebody does a malacha for external motivations. We've seen here basically different issues. And we've talked so far about doing a mitzvah for a different purpose. So here, what if you're doing a mitzvah for its normal purpose, but your motivation to do it is different than the normal motivation? So there was a whole camp that said that we consider motivation and purpose together. Meaning if I'm cooking in order to cook, or I'm cutting in order to cut, I'm writing in order to write, so it should be a Tzricha LeGufa. But why am I doing it? I'm doing it because someone's got a gun to my head. So my purpose is the purpose of the malacha. But my motivation is external compulsion. So is that called Tzricha LeGufa or Ein Tzricha LeGufa? So there was an extensive school of thought that says that was Ein Tzricha LeGufa, primarily the Maharik in Kuf Lamed Zayin, who said that a situation where somebody's got a gun to your head, that's already called a Malacha Shein Tzricha LeGufa, and the Chafetz Chaim invokes this in the Machane Yisrael, in the Sefer that he talks about the issue of soldiers, of Jews who were conscripted into the Russian army, and forced to do all kinds of things on Shabbos. So he throws in there that it can be considered to be a mlacha shenitzricha legufa because they are forced to do this by compulsion. This also relates to a discussion that Maharsha has. We'll get up to this soon. We talk about the Ma'amer, the question of what the Makoshe Sheitzin did, this individual who was executed in the Torah for Chil Shabbos. So what did he do wrong? So that's Machlokes in the Gemara, what he did. But separate from whatever specific malacha it was, maybe it was Ma'amer, it was some malacha, but the Gemara has an opinion that maybe he didn't really want to do this malacha other than to make a point that Chil Shabbos is wrong. So if that was what he wanted to do, so it says the Maharsha, let's call that a malacha shenitzricha legufa. He's not interested in malacha, he's motivated by something else. So he thought that is a malacha shenitzricha legufa. But then Taka, why'd they execute him? So they executed him because they have no way of knowing that. So the Edim can't establish that it's a malacha shenitzricha legufa. But technically, we who learned this Gemara years later, so we know that it was a malacha shenitzricha legufa. And the Kedushas Levi, who believe Yitzchak Rabbeinu, has a halfway parallel comment. He also understands it that way. But he leaves it as a kash. He says essentially that was a malacha shenitzricha legufa. So he doesn't understand why this Makosha Sheitzin was executed based on this. Apparently he was involved in doing a malacha that's ainit tzricha legufa, if that was indeed his motivation. So this logic has been applied to a lot of other situations. The Chassam Sofer has a tshuva about doctors who are forced to do malachas that's not in the category of pikuach nefesh, but they're forced to in order to keep their professional training or the like. So that could also possibly be a situation called malacha shein tzricha legufa. The Chachma Shlomo, Shlomo Kluger, has a controversial comment where he says that somebody who's working for somebody else, this would be a tremendous cool if this were true, that somebody who's working for somebody else, so his motivation is not to write, his motivation is his paycheck. So therefore, you know, like the actor says, what's my motivation? Motivation is your salary. Right? So if your motivation is your salary, so then he suggests also that would be a malach shenitzricha legufa. That's quite a chiddush. And there are those who certainly didn't think you could go that far. The Laharus Nassim has a truth about that, where he suggests that you know you don't have to get into all kinds of fancy definitions of shlichus to say that essentially here you are identified with your boss's goals, and whatever he's asking you to do, you're doing for that purpose, even though the reason you're doing it is because he is paying you. Sammy?
Do people use that Chachmas Shlomo as a smith l'hakel?
You know, Maisa, no one says mutter to work on Shabbos for a salary. So it depends which people they are. So
saying meaning like you know, Rebbe mentioned about the Tzitzel Yezer, he uses a similar svara for residency.
Right.
Saying where, you know, you're really, you can't, it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to get out of it and you have to do things and there's so many things that could come up. It's just a great, so are people, do you, for a situation like that, do people use that as a
sniflahakel
or not really?
I don't think it really comes up as man has that. You know, once upon a time, you know, Shmira Shabbos and basic day-to-day survival was considered to be much more in conflict in America than they are today. I'm sure there were those who invoked this. Again, you know, Shlomo Kluger was a significant posnik in his own right, even though he often says things that are not accepted by later posnik, but you know, is right in his opinion. You know, it actually relates to last week's parasha also. You know, I think I heard once, I never saw this in print, but that there were those who also invoked, we start to mention right at the end of parasha on Thursday, that the din of Hamavaz is Ayavaz Yosef Michomesh, that you don't have to spend more than a fifth of your money, and that the general attitude is like the Ramah, that applies to positive mitzvahs but not to negative mitzvahs. So if you have to be Mechal Shabbos, so then you have to give up all of your money. But I think there were those who paskined against this. As a Magen Avram, it sounds like that. But if your mama should be left penniless and vulnerable, so maybe you're not mechuyev to give up all of your money. And the third Tmima has a discussion about whether that Magen Avram is against the Ramah or not. So could be that these svaras were invoked once upon a time. Again, the halacha lemaisa today, I don't get to see it so much. But did the Eved, you know, was any of this invoked? Probably. Hi.
If I understand though, if I own that, we don't accept Shlomo Kluger's kula. How do we accept the Tzitzel Yezer? It's basically the same thing.
Yeah, I think it's much more limited in his case. You know, he's saying, like for example, the way that Laharus Nassim was arguing on Shlomo Kluger, saying that your job is your job. It's what you want to do. It's what you decide to be doing. So the fact that you're paid to do that You become essentially associated with your boss. So to say that you're not choosing to do these actions, it's a harder stretch than to say, you know, you're choosing to do things which otherwise should be mutter. It happens to be once in a while something gets thrown in that's not what you choose to do. That's in the case of the doctor is much more limited than here where your essential profession to say, well, I can go to work and do malachas all day because I'm being paid to do it, and so I'm not transferred to the gufa. It's a much broader application.
Especially getting paid commission every time.
Right, and commission for sure, right? I think that's the whole goal of commission, right? To make you feel invested like you're doing this for yourself and give you ownership. So that's the whole point, and I think everyone would agree that would go even further in making that tzricha l'gufa. So, you know, there are many who didn't accept this far, the Chabas Yair, and Rashi Weiss has a discussion about this. He finds it like we said before, that you think that there's a difference between purpose and motivation. That this whole chiddush, this approach, is lumping together chiddush and motivation, is lumping together purpose and motivation, and saying if you have a different purpose or a different motivation for the same purpose, that's all called ein tzricha l'gufa. And others might say, no, these are two different things. That purpose is one thing, and motivation is something else. So if I have an external motivation to do something for the normal purpose, that's called tzricha l'gufa, and that's why many didn't accept this. So one of those who discusses this objection is Reb Moshe Feinstein. Reb Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, which has interesting implications that we left kind of open. That Reb Moshe says that he raises that issue, and then he defends the Maharik's version of it. The Maharik, who talks about it in the Pikuach Nefesh situation, he says, there, you have no positive goal. The person's got a gun to your head. So the only thing you want to do is get rid of the danger. The only thing you want to do is stop this guy from killing you. So that is a purely negative goal. But some of these other situations, he doesn't go into them specifically, but to say that any time there's anything else besides the malacha that's making you do it, so he's certainly not clear from between the lines that he's not ready to go that far. And he talks about a kibbutz situation, which also this is a Yevamos unity issue, because this is a Tosus from the beginning of Yevamos. So he says, if somebody, let's say, wants to do a malacha because of kibbutz, so you wouldn't say that's ein tzricha l'gufa, because, oh, you're only doing it because your father's asking you, because that is the mitzvah of kibbutz. The mitzvah of kibbutz is to want what the father wants, is to identify with the father's goals, and therefore you wouldn't call that ein tzricha l'gufa. So what he leaves unspoken, and I wonder aloud what the implications are, so that would be if the person is saying, well, listen, I need to do this, I'll kibbutz, so can we call that a malacha ein tzricha l'gufa? So then, okay, his answer is no. But what if you're not thinking about kibbutz, because kibbutz doesn't really apply anyway if the father's asking you to do an aveira, it's not chiyuv from kibbutz anyway. But what if the reason you want to do what your father's asking is because, let's say, there's a tremendous tension in the household. You have somebody who's living in an irreligious household, and there's tremendous tension and fighting because the child's not willing to do malachos. So his only interest in doing the malacha is to get rid of the tension. I wonder if that's not also called a malacha shein tzricha l'gufa. That maybe you can make a case that that's more comparable to a gun to your head. You have no interest in this action other than having the fighting stop. Maybe that's also comparable. Again, I don't know, but maybe Reb Moshe's tshuva leaves that open a little bit, which would be a tremendous sniff l'hakel for people who are in difficult situations such as that. So those are some of the discussions about some of the expanding of that parameter. So basically we have two more topics to try to discuss in the next few minutes, and they are intertwined, so we'll discuss them together. One is the question of what type of iser is a malacha shein tzricha l'gufa, and what we will discuss in the midst of that, because it doubles back on it, is the status of a tolda and ein tzricha l'gufa. So first, just talk about the question of what kind of iser is it. So if you're Rabbi Yehuda, it's an iser deraisa, and you're chayiv for it. Or if you're the Rambam, it's an iser deraisa that you're chayiv for. End of story. But if you assume that we don't paskin that way, which seems to be the view of the majority of Rishonim, and seems to be the view of the Shulchan Aruch throws us a few curveballs in some places, but it's generally taken to be the case that the Shulchan Aruch also paskins like Reb Shimon. That's the view that the Pri Chodesh takes. The Pri Chodesh every once in a while is very good at going through everybody's opinion and telling you where the consensus is. So that's his basic take on this, that the majority view is that Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is Pater. So if we say it's Pater, but it's still prohibited, So how prohibited is it? Is it prohibited like a normal Darabana? So here there's some range. First of all, the Pnei Yeshua was the most machmir on this, where he basically said that it's still an Isser Lav, that it's still a violation of some Isser, it's just not the Melacha. You're not Chayiv Misa for it, it's Pater literally, but it's still a act of Chilul Shabbos. That would be a tremendous Chumrah. Rav Shlomo Zalman, not necessarily coming from that, but he also understands it as being close to an Isser Daraisa, more than a normal Isser Darabanan, being a very intense Isser Darabanan. So you could say, we mentioned a couple of possible reasons to say that. You could say because maybe we're choshish to some degree to the Rambam. We acknowledge the fact that there is a Deya in Rishonim that this is a Melacha Daraisa. Or also the fact, you know, we often are more machmir on something which is Ikaro Daraisa, rather than something which is Ikaro Drabbanan, right? If something has its roots in Torah law and just happens to be a rabbinical version, we're often more machmir on that than something which is purely created by rabbinical law. So here you have something which is even more than that, something which is really identical to an Aveira Minatorah that you chayav Misa for. So that's a very extreme form of Ikaro Daraisa and has the exact appearance of a Malacha Daraisa. So one could understand why some might take the approach that this is not your normal garden variety Drabbanan, and you could be more Chamer for it. So there's a variety of approaches in both directions. So for example, the Dvar Yeshua has some tshuvas where he applies some kulas to it. He talks about, for example, Kavod HaBrios, which maybe is a sugi we'll see a little bit next semester, that Kavod HaBrios, the general rule is that it can be docha the Rabbanans, but not the Raisas. So is Malach Shantrucha Lagufa considered the Rabbanan for this purpose? So he says yes. He thinks that it's grouped with Rabbanans for that kula. He also mentions, for example, another kula. This is the topic of the big debate, the big debate between Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe, the question of how to apply the heter of hitiru sofa mishum tchilasan, when something is permitted for pikuach nefesh purposes. So you're allowed to go there and do it. To what extent are you allowed to come back? Are you allowed, do we say, that if we don't let you make the full trip and come back home, you're going to not want to go the next time? So we have to let the doctor come back home from the hospital, otherwise he's not going to go the second time. So to what extent, if we assume, let's say for argument's sake, that we apply that to the Rabbanans and not to the Raisas. So would we apply that to a Malacha Shenetzricha L'Gufa? So the Dvar Yeshua assumes yes. He gives the example of somebody who has to drive to the hospital, and once he's there, he wants to know if he can turn off his car. So he treats that as a Malacha Shenetzricha L'Gufa. You're turning off your car just to protect what's there. You have, you're just interested in your car not burning up gas or being stolen or the like. So that's essentially probably a Malacha Shenetzricha L'Gufa. So that being the case, he thinks that the Svara of Hitiru Sofer Mishan Tchilasan is applicable, that we let somebody turn off his car so he shouldn't be discouraged from going to the hospital the next time because he wasn't allowed to turn off his car the previous time. So that's an example of some kulas that some poskim do apply. In other cases, you find it differently. For example, the Ran, to Shabbos Samach Aleph and Aleph, holds that he would not allow it, B'makom Pseida, or Amir Lakum, which we discussed before, that he had a more machmir view, that he wouldn't allow Melacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa to have those kulas that are sometimes applied to the Rabbanans. On the other hand, to go back in the other direction, so we find that it's probably permitted, the Magen Avraham seems to say it's permitted, Makom Tzar. The Magen Avraham is quoted that way. You have to put together a few things in order to get him to say that. That basically he's commenting on the Shulchan Aruch, a very practical issue, the question of nursing mothers who need to pump in order to relieve their suffering. Not that the child is going to be directly nursing, but they have... they've produced milk that is causing them physical suffering, so then they're allowed to release that milk because of the tsar involved. And the Magen Avraham has a comment there, well, it's like Mapas Morsa. So he's interpreted as saying that this is a Melacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa tsar heter. You could quibble a little bit, but that's how he's basically read, that because it's Melacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, the extracting of the milk is not in order to get the milk, but in order to relieve the pain of the mother, or Bahavdil, to relieve the pain of cows, comes up in that discussion as well. So then that can be considered Melacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, assuming that the milk is not used. which then becomes a whole complicated discussion how to apply that. We wanted to ask about it, Sam?
Where is the Shulchan Aruch?
The Shulchan Aruch is, I have to tell you later. But there's a whole discussion about what that means then. Does it mean it has to go right on the floor, or does it mean that it can be in a kli, but then it's thrown out later? So that's a little bit of a discussion. There are those who argue this has to do also with the definition of dash, that maybe dash only applies if you intend to keep it. The Tosfos about Tzarach Le'etzim seem to suggest like that. So maybe it's a whole definitional issue. It's even more than a Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. There are those who understand that even Rabbi Huda would allow this if you're, it's a complete kilkel, if you're just going to let the milk go to waste completely. So what exactly we can extract from this heter is a range of interpretations, how to learn from it and how to apply it, but the general idea being that the nursing of the pumping of the milk is malach shein tzricha l'gufa and seems to be allowed in the situations of pain. Hi.
Excluding the factor of dash, considering that the real issue is just to avoid the tsar, so wouldn't you still be able to use the milk that's into the baby?
So if the baby needs the milk, right, so then there's a different heterium that could be in place. And if the baby's nursing directly, so that's one thing. But if the baby's not nursing directly, and the baby's going to put it at risk because he needs the mother's milk, so then that other heterium that could be relevant. But very often that's not the case. Very often when it comes up nowadays, so the baby's on formula, let's say, or partially on formula, so that's very often the situation. The baby is somewhat on formula and somewhat nursing. So theoretically, for the course of Shabbos or a 3-day yontif, when these things sometimes come up, so there's enough formula to keep the baby happy and well fed. So the only issue is the mother needs to release the milk because it's painful. It causes problems, can cause infections. It's not a good situation. So there, it's from the baby's perspective, it's not necessary to hold on to the milk. So then the question is, you know, how does that apply? How does that?
Right, but if the whole reason is for the tsar, even if there isn't plenty of alternatives, what would be the issue at all for the baby to have if there's plenty of alternatives?
Because it could be that makom tsar, if it's a full blown isur daraisa, so then that may not be enough makom tsar. If it's a real infection, pikuach nefesh kind of situation, it'd be more. But if it's just tsar, so then we need it to be an isur derabanan. So to make it the malach shein tzricha l'gufa, we'll keep it as an isur derabanan. Okay, so this again intertwines with the issue of tolda. So before finishing this point of what exactly is the chumrah of the isur, so let's look at the tolda question for a second. So this, there was a debate that the Ran in Shabbos Kuf Yud Aleph, so the Ran talks about the situation where you're plugging up a barrel with a cloth, and the barrel's going to soak up some of the wine, and it's going to squeeze out. And there's a whole discussion if the plug is on top of the barrel, the side of the barrel. So in the context of that discussion, so the Ran says, well, it's not such an issue anyway, because he mentions Shechita being a tolda of dash, and you're not interested in the wine that's going to be squeezed out. So, what does he mean by that? So, according to the Gilgan Ashas in the Yerushalmi in the 7th parak of Shabbos, what he's saying is that, okay, it's a tolda, and you're not interested in the wine, so therefore it's a tolda shein etzricha l'gufa, and a tolda shein etzricha l'gufa, that's not a malacha at all. That's the Chiddush of the Ran, according to the Gilgan Ashas. And many accepted that reading of the Ran. The Egle Tal did not. The Egle Tal thought this was impossible. He thought that this was, again, another example of just the definition of dash. It has nothing to do with the fact that it's Ruach Hashem Tzricha L'Gufa. And he feels it's a textual problem to say this Chiddush, because the Gemara in Bava Kamma said that there's really no difference practically between an Av and a Tolda. It's just a question historically. That which was b'mishkan and chashiva was called an av, and that which was not was called the tolda. So according to you, Gilgan Ashas and the Ran, you're telling me there's a big nafkamina, can't be, I reject you. But others were not necessarily bothered by the Bava Kamma question. Maybe we'll talk about why in a second. But they accepted that the Ran could mean that, and might even be correct. There were many who did follow this approach. The Mekevus HaMishnah also took this approach, that a tolda shein tzricha l'gufa is possibly nothing, and perhaps even, let's say, Rabbi Yehuda would pater in such a case. And there were different explanations. We mentioned, I think, two explanations. One explanation was that maybe we should see malacha shein tzricha l'gufa as a form of tolda. And essentially, a tolda has some comparison to an av, but not a full comparison. So that's really what a malach shen tzrich l'gufa is. Right? That it has something in common with an av, but not enough. So it's really a tolda. So a malach shen tzrich l'gufa of a tolda is a tolda of a tolda. It's essentially a grand tolda. So this is something that, for example, Menachem Zemba mentions as an approach. I think Tzipi Safrank had a similar approach. And he essentially asserts that you can't have a grand tolda. Tolda of a tolda doesn't make the cut. Now we noted this is against Rabbeinu Hananel. Rabbeinu Hananel, in the context of Zareya, did mention a tolda of a tolda. He said that Noteya was a tolda of Zareya, and all the other ones were toldas of Noteya. So it's against Rabbeinu Hananel, but in Achanami, Rabbeinu Nachum Zemba ultimately acknowledges that, but it could be that that's the case. And the other approach was the approach that Rav Schechter favors and others, that you could say a little bit more specifically, that it's not just that an av is the basis for a tolda, but if we use the more specific definition of a tolda, that a tolda shares the function of an av without the form. It's something that you do for the same purpose, even though it's a different action. That's what makes it a tolda. So if we define a tolda that way, and we define a malacha shen tzrich l'gufa, let's say like Tosfos, that it's something that has the same form as the av, but for a different purpose, a different function. So what's the malacha, what's the tolda shen tzrich l'gufa? It's nothing. It's got a different form. Right? That's what makes it a tolda. And it's got a different function. That's what makes it a tzrich l'gufa. So it's got 0 points. It has nothing in common anymore with the av, so we could understand perhaps why it's nothing. So why would you not say like that? That's a great word, right? Why would you not say like that? So first of all, you don't have to define either term that way. It's premised on your defining tolda a certain way and defining malacha shen tzrich l'gufa a certain way. But what if you do accept both definitions? So then is it a slam dunk? Not necessarily, because you could still say a tolda has an objective definition. Once it has that objective definition, so then it becomes a tolda. If it happens to be in your specific case, you're doing a shen tzrich l'gufa, that's not going to help because the toldos are already on the books. It's not as if we're creating them fresh every time we do them. Toldos aren't just actions that you individually do that have av comparisons. They are general actions that already existed that are comparable to others. So the fact that you're doing a tolda today, ain tzrich l'gufa, doesn't have to mean that they're completely neutralized. So it is a very elegant vort, but you could find reasons not to come to that conclusion. Hi.
What was the first explanation
was that it's a tolda of a tolda. It's just a broader way of saying it, that it's a tolda of a tolda, so maybe a grand tolda can't exist. And here we're saying not necessarily it's a grand tolda issue. We don't have to necessarily take on Rabbeinu Hananel. We're saying that it's the specifics that a tolda is one without the other. Malach Shem Shrich L'gufa is the other without the one. Put them together, you're missing on both fronts, so maybe you're totally clear.
According to the logic that we said that defeats it because toldas are like already established, does that mean today we can't invent new toldas and find something else?
Yeah, I think for the most part that's probably an interesting question whether or not there is room to invent new toldas, but for the most part I don't think too many toldas have been invented in the past 700 years. I told them, you know, a tolda has a full-blown chiyuv d'oraisa. Right, so there could be things that have come up that we're machmir for, or that we consider to be drabanan fulfillment of something, but a full-blown tolda, it's probably true that we don't create more toldas nowadays. Hi.
So you have a hard time, Yaakov.
Mm-hmm.
If we, let's say, combine the last two things that we just discussed, mm-hmm. maybe it's a dindarabanan, mm-hmm. and then external pressures would create a dindarabanan, a mokshan shifu gupa. So you never have a situation of hardly Yaakov and Shabbos.
Well, you have a situation where it's considered to be Chilul Shabbos.
Yeah.
That because you're saying that the situation always by its nature makes it not to be Chilul Shabbos.
Assuming within each, if you connect more specific sheet here and specific.
Well, the first part is already enough. The first part makes it already Malach Shen Tzrich L'Gufa. Why does it necessarily involve Toldos?
No, I'm saying.
Going back to that point, then.
Going back to the part that we just said, Derabana.
Right, so it could be that every Pekuachim situation already.
Then the Gemara seems to think that there are cases where it's in Nisid Oraisa.
Whereby Pikuach Nefesh, specifically Shabbos, is still considered to be Nisid Oraisa? Is that necessarily the only way to read it? I'm not sure. I think it could maybe come out to be that maybe it's always going to be knocked down to a Drabbanan. Maybe it could be other quirks that may play into it. This, we mentioned the other day, that we were talking about whether kosev os echad is considered to be a malacha or not. So we mentioned that the kajigal of a rav has a tshuva where he tried to apply that svar and in the end didn't feel he could successfully apply it. In the situation where somebody's conscripted into the army and they make him use one fingerprint on Shabbos, so is that roshim os echad? Is that maybe not a malacha at all? And maybe could we let you get off? So he did not feel he could rely on that. He's assuming it's not a pikuach nefesh situation, that it's some other type of strong compulsion. So the Shabin Arav has a tshuva where he just deals with the same situation. I forgot whether Shabin Arav or his brother, actually maybe it was his brother, the Chazon Nachum, deals with this situation, the exact same case. And he is makil based on what we just said today, the tzivir for the last 2 points. One is that it's external compulsion, so it's malach shem tzricha v'gufa, even if it's not fully arvei avor. And roshem is a tolda, so okay, so it's a tolda shem tzricha v'gufa. So you put that together, he thinks there's room to be makel. So it's almost time for mincha. So just to quickly, or is it really time for mincha? We may have to fill in tomorrow just how then Rav Shechter applies this in his sefer. He applies this to. He then asks the question: is this a malacha derabbanan or a gzeira derabbanan? Which he essentially plugs into the whole question of how chomer it is, and he suggests that a malacha shenet shrich legufa is a malacha derabanan and is more chomer, while a tolda shenet shrich legufa is a gzeira derabanan and is subject to more leniencies. So the Meiri raises the question why sometimes we're makel and sometimes we're not for a chola. Mafis morsa, we're makel for a chola, we let you do it. And extinguishing the fire, we assume, is still not necessarily mutter, still also derabanan, even for a chola. So the Meiri has different terutzim to show why the cases are different. And Rav Shechter suggests that no, they're different because the case of mafis morsa, that's a tolda. So a tolda shen shrich legufa is a gzeira derabanan, is mutter for a chola. And the case of extinguishing the fire, that is an av, shenis ruch lagufa, so it's a malacha derabanan, and therefore we don't allow it for a chola. So that's his mamzish difference. What he doesn't emphasize there is that he's really disagreeing then with the Meiri. The Meiri is essentially saying that the controlling principle is that this is all mutter b'makom chola, he just has to give you reasons why the case with the candle is different, while Shechter is saying, no, it depends whether we're talking about an av or a tolda. Okay, so that's basically what we spoke about Malach Shem Tzrich L'Gufa. If anybody has any questions, we are a little bit out of time, so we can either discuss it privately or discuss it tomorrow. God willing, tomorrow we'll try to get as much of Psik Reisha done and hopefully get back into Kotzer so that we're not losing too much time. Okay, Shkayach.